James.
That's me, man.
How are you, buddy?
Doing well. Good to hear you again.
Welcome back to the Bob Tuscan Show. Of course, James joins us the first Wednesday of every month, and how appropriate we start the month off with a Wednesday.
And yeah, here it is, June 1st, and this is for anybody keeping score at home. I guess this is our third appearance.
Who's keeping count?
I guess I am. I think it's our
third. I guess you are. That's right. Well, yes, it's your third appearance of soon to be a Google More, and geez, there's a lot to talk about. We've been taking the week off, spending some time, you know, just living life for a change rather than going through the, you know, the news. I was able to take Monday off and, as most people did for Memorial Day, get out in the sun and on the river and spend some time with good friends and just enjoy myself. Because after all, that's what we're fighting for in a sense. We're fighting for the ability to do these things that we take for granted that the elite pedophiles don't want us to be able to enjoy.
So I'm on a hiatus myself through this week, and this is actually my only sort of media appearance. We didn't do New World next week this week, and I'm going to take this week off from my live radio show. But I worked Monday, but it was double time, so you won't really hear me complain about that.
Nice.
But something else in this, I think, speaks to what you were just talking about, still about ultimately enjoying yourself, because that's what we're trying to kind of fight for and express about. I went to a concert last night. I'm going to go to another concert here in just a couple of days. And that's something for me is, you know, kind of really important to kind of feel that and enjoy that, and for at least a little while.
Absolutely. Music's awesome.
And not think about...
What are you going to say?
Last night I went to go see a band called Chick Chick Chick, and you may know them as 3!!, which is actually their official band title. And they're kind of a dance rock band. They had just played Sasquatch, which is a big festival here in the Pacific Northwest that just happened this past weekend. But it was in a tiny club, and it was pretty much a fun dance party. And again, not kind of electronic, all done with live instrumentations and guitars and saxophones and drums and... Fantastic. So the next show coming up this Sunday, I'm going to go see a band called Sloan, which have got to be one of my favorite bands in the world. They just put out their 10th studio record and are essentially on their 20th anniversary tour. They've always kind of been the little band that could. They're out of Halifax, Nova Scotia. In the Alterna heyday, they were actually signed to Geffen here in the States and were even on some compilations with Sonic Youth, Beck, Nirvana. But they never really had a big kind of stateside breakthrough, and they've always kind of flown under the radar. And it's a four-piece band, but they all sing, they all write songs.
Cool. Conscious lyrics? Any lyrics about what we talk about or no?
No, not so much. It's kind of a power pop, you know, very, very Beatly, very maybe almost.
I don't understand why people can't make good music and also have an uplifting message that has to deal with real things and not just this... You know, vanity. That's one thing I can't get over these days. I love instrumental, you know, pieces. Yeah. I love great instruments and harmonies and that kind of thing. But if you're going to have lyrics, why not make them conscious?
And the band Chick Chick Chick, actually, a lot of their lyrics sort of are at least kind of quasi-political and social. They do have song titles called, you know...
Hey, not to interrupt, but the topic of conversation has come up a few times this weekend amongst myself and friends. Has mainstream music like the Beatles and the Grateful Dead and even Bob Marley to a certain extent, whose music was very conscious and very uplifting, and he even reported that he would not sell out to the CIA in one of his songs, Rat Race. But could this music be a part of the dumbing and numbing and mind control of the public? For example, you know, the Beatles, Every Little Thing's Gonna Be All Right. No, that's Bob Marley. What's the Beatles one I'm looking for?
I don't know. All You Need Is Love?
That I get down with. But just all the apathy we see from this music. Is it possible that this music was used to numb people so that they were so passive that, you know, because there's a lot of apathy we see. Mm-hmm. Let it be is the one I was trying to think of.
Oh, okay.
But let it be. And yeah, you can look at it in one sense and say, oh, just let it be and move on or whatever. But let what be? Should we let the chemtrails be? Should we let the false flag terrorism be? You know, is this the mantra that we want to repeat in our music? I don't know.
Well, you maybe even hit upon the word right there, saying mantra, and there is a lot to discuss within that. And there is, you know, I'm sure some folks out there may be familiar with the talk about, you know, the Beatles even being used as a sort of Tavistock Institute mind control, you know, operation to put this music out and to spread the ideas of sort of sex and drugs and break down the family and all of those sorts of things. I've never really seen too much credible evidence to that, you know, kind of topic. But what I will say is whether or not, you know, Grateful Dead, Bob Marley, Beatles have been used over the past, you know, couple of generations as a pacifying effect, flying in the face of what it seems as though they are, that, you know, that is a question that's worth some debate. But I would say in this day and age, I remember a couple of years ago there was an article in Spin magazine, which I've read forever. And again, you know, I come from college radio. I am a movie, music, you know, pop culture kind of buff. It's only now and only through, you know, the last almost, you know, decade of, you know, amateur research into alternative media and alternative history that I can view the media and the pop culture with, you know, now a better and kind of sharper lens, if you will. But there was an article in Spin kind of bemoaning the fact of, like, what has rock and roll become? And the article began with, you know, a big, you know, splash photo of two different rock stars. And the one on the left was Tommy Lee from Motley Crue in their heyday, you know, with whiskey in his pocket and no shirt on and a, you know, cigarette up his nose and just the kind of rock and roll look. And then on the other page was, I guess, that year's kind of rock guy that was on American Idol, who was this sort of clean cut. Yes, he had some black leather on and maybe some facial stubble. But it was essentially saying that rock and roll isn't dangerous anymore. Now, while I'll be the first to say I'm not calling for a return to the days of, you know, Guns N' Roses riots in, you know, in stadiums and amphitheaters, but essentially you don't really see anything even approaching that anymore. Not like I'm saying, oh, I sure wish Guns N' Roses were starting riots in, you know, mega amphitheaters. That's not really what I mean. It's just bringing up the question, you know, where did the danger in all of it go? It has all essentially been commodified on the mass level. Are there underground scenes all across the world? You bet your butt there are. Mm-hmm. And only growing and getting bigger, hopefully. Right. So I would never be the one to say, ah, the music today sucks, or all the films today suck.
No, like everything.
I always say that, exactly.
There's good and bad with everything. And we see conscious artists out there like Payday, Monsanto, and others, you know, using their music to get out the good word. All right, when we come back, we'll continue talking with James Evan Palazzo. And I'll also ask the question, did Paul die in a car crash? I love the Beatle conspiracy stuff. It's fun. All right. And we'll talk about some news, Sears Tower, other stuff coming up. This is Bob Justice Show. All right, folks. Next hour, we'll take another look at the story with James Evan Palazzo of TheMonarchy.com that we started off the show talking about, which is this Agent Orange being sprayed on Canada. You may have heard the story a couple months back. Well, it turns out that that's just scratching the surface. We'll get back to that. And we'll also talk maybe a little bit more about the Beatle conspiracies and whatnot, but I don't want to get distracted by that too much. It's fun to think about. It's also fun to look at the Disney World stuff. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we'll have Freeman come on to talk about that.
There you go.
Definitely a lot to talk about with the Disney World stuff. And you have another website that's geared towards more of the occult, esoteric aspect of it all. And that site is, James?
It's called holyhexes.com.
Very cool. Yeah, so perhaps that would be the spot to look for James' take on these sorts of issues. And
mm-hmm. But where I wanted to go before mm-hmm. we hit the break, as we were talking about music, you know, versus sort of conscious music, and I feel like that perfectly makes the opportunity to bring up a huge musical hero of mine passed away last Friday, a guy named Gil Scott-Heron. He's been called the godfather of rap, and he died last Friday at the age of 62. Folks out there,
the revolution will not be televised.
Exactly. Whitey on the Moon, No Knock, Watergate Blues. I mean, he was someone, and again, so many of these things within music, you know, and I quote the Beastie Boys sometimes. You know, there's been many times in my life when I thought I might lose it. The only thing to save me has always been music. But when I heard Gil Scott-Heron for the first time, you know, years ago, I'm not sure now, I probably just got a best of CD just to try and check it out, because I had heard about this guy before, but I had never heard him. And it was one of those, you know, revelatory kind of experiences that when you hear an artist, it instantly kind of bridges the gap and makes sense. And you hear that and you go, oh, that is the root, or a major root, of what became rap and hip hop. Just the same way I think when I heard someone like Nick Drake, it was like, oh, that's where Belle and Sebastian came from. Or when I first heard Can, you know, that's where I was like, oh, that's Stereolab. And not to get bogged down in all kinds of obscure band names, but hopefully folks out there have heard of many of those bands. But Gil Scott-Heron passed away, and his music was always hugely political, hugely social. I would implore folks to go and check out his music. I do have an obituary post up on MediaMonarchy.com that I did fill in with a lot of links to, you know, songs and videos and things. And he was obviously hugely conscious. And did that limit, you know, perhaps him becoming an even bigger artist? Perhaps. You can definitely also say he got screwed up on drugs, and there were many years where he wasn't doing any recording because he was in prison. So he unfortunately did fall into, you know, many of the kind of social pitfalls for someone. But I would definitely implore folks to go check out Gil Scott-Heron, and of course, yeah, the revolution will not be televised, but then dig deeper and check out some of the other songs, you know, that are almost just beautiful, you know, kind of acoustic soul R&B kind of tunes. But what I really want to talk about and want to get into here, and I'm glad for you to give me this, you know, chance, is something that I'm actually still kind of fleshing out for myself, and I'm crafting and drafting a post that, as we speak right now, isn't up yet on MediaMonarchy.com, but will be very soon. And actually, hopefully, I'll ask that you can help spread that out and maybe repost it on the IntelHub.com or some of the other places. But
sure.
Essentially, the other day at work in the break room, and this is sometimes how I'm still, even when I'm on my lunch break, I'm still news gathering and going through the newspapers in the break room at my job, where we basically have the Oregonian, our local newspaper, which is, you know, sadly low on original regional reporting and heavy on, you know, New York Times, Associated Press, you know, rip and read added in. But we also have the New York Times. So while flipping through the New York Times just the other day, and actually it was yesterday, it was in the May 31st New York Times, it was on C1, so you had to kind of look for it into the sections. But the article is called Willis Tower Suspends Visitors Above Chicago, Suspended in Space 103 Stories Over Chicago, and I'll just give you the lead-in. The view looking down the glass floor toward South Wacker Drive is just what you'd expect if you were balanced on top of 6,960 boxes of this city's deep dish pizza. Or, as the exhibition at the Willis Tower also tells us, standing atop 313 Oprah Winfreys or 283 Barack Obamas. That thought brings on its own sort of vertigo. The comfort is that those human towers would reach the top of the building itself. While this particular perch for a human version of Yertle the Turtle is a bit lower, on the 103rd floor, fewer pizzas, media stars, and presidents would be required. What are we talking about here? They have built and remodeled what is called the Sky Deck at the now called Willis Tower, formerly called the Sears Tower. And I'm just going to go over this, Bob, and I'll then let you kind of fill in some of the pieces that we briefly discussed during the break. But basically, they've remodeled this Sky Deck that you can now walk outside the building and you are in a glass box.
That sounds nice.
You know, I mean, I'm sure it's pretty awe-inspiring and kind of amazing. So this has only been, you know, and what did we say that, you know, it was the Sears Tower up until 2009, and now it's
right.
called Phillips Tower.
Mm-hmm. And we'll tell the listeners a little bit more about that in just a second, but go ahead.
But the point I want to get across is that as soon as I saw this, this reminded me of what some folks may remember if you've, you know, if you've got your, you know, bachelor's degree in 9/11 folklore. There was an event in the months leading up to 9/11 where alleged art students pulled an art project where they allegedly removed a window from the World Trade Center and built a ledge that you could walk out on. Whether or not they actually did this and it was all an elaborate hoax, I believe, may be up for some type of discussion. But when the book came out documenting this art project, it was called The Bee Thing, as in just the letter B, The Bee Thing. And the art group was called Gelatin. Of course, a month later, we had 9/11. And only in the post 9/11 investigations did we learn that in addition to not only just the Israeli spy ring, we have the Israeli art student spy ring connected to these guys who allegedly did this bee thing where they built a ledge out from the World Trade Center. So again, trying to look at the predictive programming and the media and the memes, and that's why I, you know, obsessively go through media so much, even when I'm on a supposed break from the show and the site. When I see something like this, it just, you know, sent massive red flags off. So Bob, I'll let you explain why seeing a story now about this ledge and observation sky deck at the Willis Tower reminded me of the Israeli art students building an alleged, you know, ledge and sky deck at the World Trade Center,
you know,
in the week leading up to 9/11.
Exactly. And there's no there's no real reason why we shouldn't look at the possibility that the Sears Tower's next, okay? There really isn't. And I don't believe that there's some sort of just, you know, this is just a matter of coincidence. No, it's not. There's something to this. And when we get back in just a moment, we're coming up to a break, James. I'll break it down for them. We've talked about this before. We've had Popeye on from Federal Jack, who also sees a potential false flag to affect the Sears Tower. Whether or not that comes to fruition will be determined. We'll keep an eye on it, though, nonetheless. And there is a lot of things that it shares in common with the World Trade Center. All right, folks, this is the Bob Tuscan Show. We'll be right back. What does the Sears Tower and the World Trade Center terror drills have in common? Larry Silverstein, owner of the Silverstein Properties and the man who leased the World Trade Center towers, also happens to be the owner of the Sears Towers in Chicago. The complex was renamed the Willis Tower on July 16th, 2009, and is insured by global insurance broker Willis Group Holdings. The insurer is very important in the grand scheme, as can be seen with the World Trade Center, whose insurance settlement amounted to a cool $4.68 billion. A company named Kroll is the company tasked with providing security for the Sears Tower. After 9/11, Kroll purchased Convair, the very company that was responsible, surprise, surprise, for recovering data from World Trade Center hard drives after 9/11. Kroll also managed the bunker in the World Trade Center and is known to have had a hand in the London 7/7 bombings. The Willis Tower, as it now is called, just so happens to have an asbestos problem, much like the one that plagued the World Trade Center, Contrary to what many claim, there is clear evidence that shows asbestos problems within the Willis, that there are asbestos problems within the Willis Tower. Remember that on September 11th, 2001, NORAD was conducting a war game drill that simulated planes flying into towers, right? Well, there is the very, at very least, a very eerie correlation with the upcoming terror drills that will be conducted in Chicago in the next couple months here, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, actually, I can take it from there with a little update.
Okay, go ahead.
Fine. Since last year, a number of emergency drills and exercises have taken place in and around the city of Chicago, such as June 2010, emergency drills closed Chicago area roads. Also, Armageddon simulated in Chicago. Those are news headlines for you to check out from Chicago Breaking News and the Epoch Times. And then in May 2011, the third tallest building in Chicago enhances security, conducts fire evacuation drills. So on June 10th, that would be 9 days from now, Chicago's Northwest Community Hospital and the U.S. Army Reserve will perform an emergency exercise called Red Dragon to prepare for any future event involving mass death.
You said your source on this was Epoch Times?
Well, on some of those previous drills and things.
Yeah, because I know they very much are focused on China. And mm-hmm. How does China play into this all? Man, it's tough enough to consider the Illuminati that we have to deal with. But what China is all about, I don't know. I don't know. I've wrapped my head around it.
No, definitely not. And is that where Benjamin Fulford is based out of, and sort of
he's
all
in Japan,
his,
but yeah,
okay.
There's a lot. We've had Dr. Charles Lee on the program to talk about China and specifically the Falun Gong and Falun Dafa and the organ harvesting. Crazy stuff.
Well, I was going to say let's not veer off.
Sure.
That.
Go ahead.
I think for folks, basically what we're saying and what we're boiling down here, and like I said, I'll have, you know, these stories that we're citing and we're citing in this segment and the previous segment, I'm going to have those all linked up and put together on a post here shortly on MediaMonarchy.com. But the drills, the amount of lead up in the drills are similar from the Willis Tower to the World Trade Center. Some of the same organizations like Silverstein and some of the, you know, the private industrial, you know, intelligence complex, their involvement. And also I would want to point out that you mentioned Kroll and Convar and data recovery. And I would, you know, not miss the opportunity to point to the work of Richard Grove. And I think a lot of this he details in his old podcast series called 9/11 Synchronicity, going into, you know, all of that and the lead up and the intelligence and the insurance racket and all of those things leading up to, mm-hmm. you know, heaven.
Yeah, Richard and I are in touch, and he's going to be coming on the show. He promises me he's coming on, and he's just working on another edition of, what is it, What on Earth?
What You've Been Missing.
What You've Been Missing, yeah, thanks. And, of course, his website, Tragedy and Hope, a great site that James is also involved with.
Well, I think, again, Bob, we're basically saying the drills look the same. The ownership of Silverstein looks the same, and now we have Rahm Emanuel as the mayor of
right.
And you pointed out asbestos problems, and the interesting piece of the puzzle that I'm kind of offering here, and again, I don't feel like I've seen anybody make this, you know, point and bring this out, which again, I'll kind of ask folks to help spread this out when we get it posted up after this show, is the similarities and the sort of predictive programming now of this ledge and skywalk on the Willis Tower that emulates the Israeli art student spy ring event in the World Trade Center called the Bee Thing.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see what happens with this. You know, we're not saying for certain that something's going to happen, but we have to bring awareness to this, and hopefully it will spook them from trying to do something like this, because they'll say, oh, no, they know about us. But I don't know. That being said, they probably don't care. They like to do this stuff right in front of everyone's faces anyways.
And it, of course, too, it's difficult to be in the sort of need we bring up the Armageddon, you know, doomsday rapture predictions that, yeah, being in the predictions game is a pretty dicey operation. and perhaps spending too much time on the drills could be something, again, where there was a point in time where that was of utmost pivotal importance within, you know, 9/11 truth and alternative activism and those communities. Could it be, you know, as many have said, you know, maybe that's a dead, you know, a dead paradigm and they've moved on to their other, you know, their other thing. I saw folks whose, you know, kind of primary focus, you know, back in the day in the early 2000s were covering the terror drills. There were folks like Greg Nixon of Daily Dose of Terror and even Daniel Abramson on False Flag News would cover, you know, all the drills and those connections. And they both essentially got to the point where they were like, I'm done trying to follow this because obviously they've already moved on to their next economical, you know, false flag, which, of course, they were absolutely right, which then the public, you know, found out about in 2008. So, it, as you said, it's important to discuss and at least kind of put out there and get on the record. So at least, you know, we can try and plant seeds with folks. As I was mentioning, I saw the story about the Skywalk in the New York Times paper the other day. And I don't know if I've mentioned to you before, but for me, a great sort of, you know, culture jamming, if you will, or as even Jello Biafra called monkey wrenching the New World Order. As I flip through the newspapers, I always make sure I have a pen or pencil with me, and I make annotations and notes on the newspapers about the articles and some of the things that it says so that I know the next person who's up in the break room on their lunch, and, you know, we've got hundreds of people that work there, are going to flip through the paper and then see little handwritten notes saying, you know, for the real story, you know, Google this term or, hey, I basically annotate the newspapers. So hopefully then folks flipping through it are like, hey, yeah, you know, what was that about? I try and, you know, point out the discrepancies or give a little bit of context or subtext to it.
It's helpful, I think, to a lot of people to see that sort of thing and to have people tell them about alternative sources of media. I'll share a quick story and then we'll take a quick break and continue our talk with James Evan Plato on the show today, folks. But what happened to me today was kind of funny. I'm taking some classes, finishing up my degree in philosophy for whatever that's worth. But that aside, I'm taking this class of improvisation for political and social issues. Long story short, it's an improv class, really fun. I always make it about stuff that we talk about on the show. I try to, you know, incorporate as many conscious themes as possible. And sometimes I wish I could record the different improv games, kind of like Whose Line Is It Anyways type improv games, because I always come up with some truther, if you will, for lack of a better term, related commentary and comedy. And it's a good time. Anyways, long story short, you know how they ask the crowd for a suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my suggestion that I gave out was free energy. And the moderator went with that suggestion. And the cast that was on doing the improv had no clue what free energy was. No clue. To the point where that was the joke through the scene as, we're doing a scene, we're doing scenes and we're doing this improvisation about free energy, but none of us know what the heck free energy is. You know,
so that became the gist of the skit. Hey, yeah. Do you know what free energy is?
Yeah, we're here for this free energy conference, but we don't know what free energy is. And long story short, this class was just, after the skit, was so hungry to figure out what free energy is exactly that they got a mouthful. And I'll tell you what I told them when we get back from break. This is the Bob Tuscan Show. All right, here's what happened. They wanted to know. I said, what the heck is this free energy stuff? Fairly simple concept. Our current system is scarcity-based energy supply controlled by the military-industrial complex and other elite scumbags. Does not have to be. we've had the potential for nearly 100-plus years, at least 100-plus years, for free energy. And when I say free, I don't mean, you know, that's kind of a misleading term in a sense. All I mean is that it's in abundance. It's to the point where they couldn't profit off of it. They couldn't, and this is exactly what I told my peers.
And as we were discussing during the break, this, that, you know, free energy on the surface sounds fairly innocuous, whereas had you thrown out as a topic idea, you know, like I said, mind control.
Oh, like, and I have.
That's, but, a heavy, that's a heavy thing.
Exactly.
But free energy was sort of like a little, you know, mental grenade.
Yeah, that, and it might wake them up. It might be one of those good topics as an introduction to waking people up. We always, you know, it's I can guarantee you that 9/11 is not the easiest thing to help break through people's conditioning.
Not anymore, unfortunately.
No. I mean, for me it was. For you it was. Mm-hmm. But for anybody else who's still in the dark at this point, I mean, not everybody else. I guess there's a whole younger generation that wasn't even brainwashed to the same extent that we were. I think about that sometimes.
Listen,
you know?
I kind of worry that it's maybe the flip side, that actually they've gotten it from the very youngest age. So think about, you know, we were 20-something when 9/11 happened, but think about the people who were little kids who are now graduating high school, going to college. They know nothing other than the post-9/11 police state and think all of this is normal, that these things are normal things that happen in a supposedly, you know, democratic republic, or a constitutional republic, I should say.
They can't remember days when their skies weren't filled with chemtrails.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if our listeners realize this. Those chemtrails haven't been up there for the last 20. They haven't been up there for the last 15 years, I would say.
I imagine, and I guess from, you know, and I've definitely prefaced by saying I've not done a ton of research into chemtrails, but I know I definitely try and tell more folks and make the point on my show about using the term geoengineering sometimes to get into the topic, because that's what they're calling it. They're calling it, oh, we're just geoengineering and climate change and blah, blah, blah. And chemtrail, I wonder if sometimes can be a negative word, like Rush Limbaugh would say. Oh, that's, you know, that's a kook detector word. When you say stuff like that, it's an instant, you know, oh, you're a nut. But if you talk about geoengineering, and if you cite, you know, the papers and Council on Foreign Relations and all the others who talk about, you know, affecting the atmosphere, look at the tests of barium and aluminum and all that stuff.
Yeah, but it's the term chemtrail, I think, that does turn people off. It's a trigger.
It's tough, yeah.
And the same with conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
Anything that is a conspiracy. And it's so overused. We've talked about the use of that word. You know, people understand that.
Mm-hmm. And as Richard Grove said, you know, and has pointed out in his work, conspiracy theory didn't even appear in the OED until 97, which is when the Mel Gibson movie Conspiracy Theory came out. All of this coming on the tail of, you know, the militias and Clinton and all of that stuff in the 90s. That was the sort of nascent, you know, petri dish of what would ultimately become, you know, alternative media in some way, shape or form. That gets into the whole, you know, all the weird connections, and I like Alex Jones and you don't like this person, and you know what we can refer, I think it was Visigoth, if folks remember Beyond the Grassy Knoll, great show from a guy called Visigoth. He would always call it, you know, the Patriot Games, P-A-Y, Patriot Games, and try and not get into, you know, all the bashing and getting into attacking different hosts in the alternative media. Definitely, I mean, there's there are, of course, things to attack. I just don't feel like that's the best use of our time.
Well, the infighting's got to stop. You know,
I tend to just not necessarily give things attention.
Well, the powers that shouldn't be, they're unified in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
You know, so here's an interesting one. You just kind of mentioned this in talking about infighting, because this kind of came up recently. At my job, just this past Sunday, in the middle of the day, on the Sunday before Memorial Day, so we were packed, of course, you know, a grocery store in, you know, Portland, Oregon. All of a sudden, not, you know, gory details, but essentially, we were targeted with a flash mob protesting the fact that my store does carry some Israeli products. We were targeted for a protest because we do carry some Israeli products that, you know, and I have some of their paperwork and stuff that I did grab that, you know, support the Israeli apartheid. So it was one of those things where, while I agree with, you know, your stance, I guess with a lot of the folks in the store, and I know my coworkers and things, like, I think it just kind of rubbed everybody the wrong way and left a bad taste in everyone's mouth. Because it was sort of like, you're going to come to an independent, locally owned business and complain that we're not doing this, this, and this more for, you know, this person and this other group. Where I would, one, say, you know, well, vote with your dollar. Don't buy it. We're a grocery store. We take things off the shelf all the time that don't sell.
Yeah.
That you can, you know, wage the information war. And they were doing it. But, again, it was one of those where it's like, you're disrupting our business. Like, they kind of shut down
the
stands in the front end.
There's so many issues in general that people waste their time with. You know, and they just get caught up on these stupid non-issues. I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone, but I think those people that stand outside of the abortion clinics, I mean, I don't agree with abortion, but those people, you know, I ask them, I roll down my window as I see these people, and I say to them, do you guys care about what's going on right now? What about the soldiers? What about the fluoridation or water supply or whatever it is I'm talking about? They have no clue.
So. There's so much, I think, probably on both the left and the right of the phony political paradigm, that there is so much time and energy spent on these sort of identity politics issues.
Well,
but what I was talking about with coworkers after we had this kind of flash mob protest,
real quick, we're running out of time.
Is that that's kind of the reason why the left ideals aren't as successful as the right ideas, because the right gets in lockstep and the left says, well, I'd like to support you, but you're not a vegetarian.
That's hypocrisy at its best. All right. Thank you so much, James.
Oh, man, I'll stick around one more segment with you.
All right. Stand by. We'll get to that next hour. This is the Bob Chesky Show. James Evan Pilato, our special guest, the first Wednesday of every month, and I'll let him finish a quick look at the news and non-news alike. James?
So, as folks may or may not know, MediaMonarchy.com is the flagship site, but I have a few other sites that cover other specific areas. And right now on foodworldorder.com, a story that, again, speaking of my town here in Portland, Oregon, the controversy and the question raging right now is whether or not our local kind of favorite, famous, independent, organic, fair trade coffee company named Stumptown, whether or not they've sold out. So that article sources back to, you know, corporate filings, and it's from The Gothamist and Esquire, and it's just another sad story of what seems to be the American dream is to sell out. It seems like that's the ultimate goal anymore, is not to just, oh, maybe I can, you know, make it and pull myself up by my bootstraps. It seems the American dream is now the idea of, oh, hopefully I can sell this idea I had to corporate, you know, mavens. And we already discussed, you know, Skype being sold to Microsoft. And just another unfortunate, like, oh, God, that used to be something, you know, cool and independent. And now it's just been gobbled up. So that question is raging right now here in Portland. Also on Food World Order, we have, of course, the food pyramid being replaced with the plate-shaped logo. I don't know if you've covered that story, but it's on there on Food World
Order. Oh, man, the food pyramid was a joke from the very beginning. And now just to replace it with this... Man.
I did always enjoy that their website was mypyramid.gov.
Yeah, right?
But on some of my other sites, cyberspacewar.com, getting into the cyber attack and Lockheed Martin and cyber attacks count as an act of war, you know, our misleaders claim. And, of course, there's holyhexes.com. But I also, while I am on sort of a break, my Twitter feed is actually going to be a source to find some things that won't make it to the websites, just things to kind of quickly tweet out. But, of course, twitter.com/mediamonarchy. One of the recent things I have is satire from The Onion, because they do it so well. Report says economy failing because U.S. built on ancient Indian burial grounds. Now, while that may sound like a joke for folks, it's pretty much the central thesis of the fantastic three-part series from Peter Lavenda called Sinister Forces, that if there are holy sites, doesn't it stand to reason that there are also unholy sites, and the entire America is essentially a haunted house built on stolen Indian land, and it's now where our military bases and our prisons always seem to be over top of mounds, such as Moundsville in my home state of West Virginia. So really? That's, again, you know, satire done by The Onion and some other places, like betterbadnews.com is a great one.
That's
really
a great site.
To it.
And, of course, we're going to continue to celebrate Christopher Columbus Day here on the Bob Tuscan Show because, well, he was a great mass murderer, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. He really was. He really was. And, of course, you know, we are the Columbian Endeavor to find, you know, Atlantis.
There it is again. We talked about that last show, didn't we?
Oh, yep. Thanks so much for having me on again, man. I really appreciate it. I enjoy the kind of easygoing back and forth that we can have here.
Hey, anytime. Not anytime. The first Wednesday of every month, James.
All right. We'll keep it to that for now.
All right. We'll have you back on as soon as possible. All right. Thanks, James, so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, brother.
All right, folks, we'll be back in just a moment. I'll take a look at the Georgia Guidestones and the Masons of Georgia and their chipping program. Don't go anywhere.